Good evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. As always, every conversation we have with you each week includes you. If you'd like to join us, our number is 941-3689, 941-3689 from the Neighbor Islands. Or if you're listening to the live stream someplace else, you can get to us at 877-941-3689. Well, you can chalk one up for Hawaii's Sunshine Law. This month, Hawaii Supreme Court handed down a decision saying the Maui County Council didn't exactly follow the rules in the process of continued deliberation over a development project. Kanahele versus Maui County Council was the first time in 20 years the High Court weighed in on Hawaii's open meetings law, and it paid particular attention to the law's spirit and intent. Today, we got news of another lawsuit also being brought against the Maui County Council. And tonight, we're going to look at how the opinion will be the guide for future councils and whether how to abide by the open meetings law is any better understood now. Do you understand Hawaii's Sunshine Law? And have you had experiences using or perhaps even being thwarted by it? We want to hear from you. Our number again is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Tonight's panel includes Lance Collins, the attorney who argued the case, Larry Geller, the editor of the blog Disappeared News, and the director of the state's Office of Information Practices, Cheryl Kakazu Park. Thanks for all being here.
Thank you.
Now, let's catch everybody up just a little bit, because although it lives and breathes with all of you, for a lot of people, the idea that the Sunshine Law has somehow been reactivated with this case and a lot of attention now focusing on it may be newer pieces of information. So, Lance, with this case that stems from meetings in 2008 by the Maui County Council over a development project that has to do with how the meetings were continued one to another and the memoranda that happened in between, correct?
Yes, yeah. Actually, the meeting started in 2007, and the council in one of its committees continued to recess their meetings one after the other without giving additional notice of future meetings and didn't give anyone other than the developer's representative the ability to testify.
Now, a lot of people might say, well, that doesn't sound fair.
Well, a lot of people didn't feel like it was fair. And with this committee in particular, they considered all sorts of information. It was sort of like a congressional committee where every time they met, they thought of more things to ask people, experts about. They'd write them letters and then they'd have a meeting a week later. And so it felt even more unfair because they were considering things that nobody could have possibly have known at the beginning that they were even going to consider because it didn't exist.
Which might be okay because having a question arise is fine. It's just the process by which all of that was made known, or in this case, not necessarily made known, and how, what, and to whom got that information is really an issue.
Right. And so that ended up being one of the big problems with the deliberation was that there wasn't this sense of openness and transparency and sort of democratic public participation in this process. It just sort of felt like everything was being pushed through. And the committee had its final meeting, issued its report, and then it moved over to the council where the council did do continuations of their meeting. It wasn't 12 like it was at the committee level. They only recessed twice. But instead of doing 12 recesses at the council level, they submitted memoranda proposing amendments to the committee's version.
These memoranda are flying from one council member to another.
From one council member to all of the other council members. And at the end of every single one of them, it said, you know, I ask for your, a positive consideration. If you have any questions, please contact me or committee staff.
So it was meant to influence.
Absolutely.
And that's the part that's the sticky part.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so that, I mean, those were the two main issues that were before the Supreme Court. And, you know, people, when the council was considering these amendments, these memoranda, it was sort of a shock. They had 10 hours of public testimony. They recessed. The next day or the next week, they had another part of the meeting where they were considering the bills. And then all of a sudden, people were just, council members were starting to refer to memoranda. Oh, the memoranda I sent all of you, I really feel strongly about this paragraph, and they would read it, and everybody's looking at each other like, what are they talking about? And that I think more, even more than the sort of marathon recessing, I think people felt that that had seriously crossed a line of fairness, because, you know, people who hadn't been following it too closely or not, you know, they wanted to watch the council meeting, and then all of a sudden there's like this parallel discussion that's being referred to that nobody in the public knew anything about.
That clearly was inclusive to the people having it and exclusive to everybody else, which Larry Gelb seemed to be the big problem in excluding public
process. It's a problem because if you want people to – if you want to hold an open meeting, you don't do it that way. You put out an agenda. You post it officially. People come. They can sit there. They can either watch or give testimony or whatever. And you do this for the next meeting and the next meeting. You don't recess 12 meetings without an agenda and so forth. So for a person, for a member of the public who is – perhaps interested in this or could be interested in this, they had no way of what's going on. And the same for the memoranda circulating. If you want to involve the public, you don't do that. You do it differently. And so this time they ended up in court. I think other times people get away with this. This time they got caught.
Cheryl Park, IOP has had...
OIP.
You know, it's been one of those days. Dyslexia strikes again. On your website, very clear for anybody to find what the Sunshine Law is. There's even a test you can take to find out how much you know or in some cases don't know about it. It's not as if this thing is hiding under a bushel. The point that Larry and Lance have been making is that, you know, there's a concerted effort to obfuscate a lot of the information and not make it public and in many ways not comply with the law. Is that how you feel about this?
I don't think so. I think that the agencies really try, but this case was, it started back in 2007, and it was before we put all this stuff on this on our website. Now, if this were to come up today, when we had all those things on our website and all the guidance that we continually put out, you know, we might look at it differently. But I think in general, the agencies try, but maybe you have such a high turnover in the boards and commissions that they don't know it in the beginning, the ins and outs of the Sunshine Law. So they would have to go to our website and inform themselves, educate themselves. It's there 24/7.
Now it is. I mean, your point is that you're cutting them a break a little bit because this happened at a time before this was actually available on the website as it is now. But you're also making the case that, hey, if you're going to be on a board, you better know this stuff.
And
because
it's
if you don't, you may get
out.
Caught.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In this case, where there were successive meetings, and they weren't exactly slammed for the fact that they had successive meetings. The idea was, well, sort of, there was an umbrella agenda, and it was just being continued from meeting to meeting. That was not so much of the problem, although a lot of people might say, yeah, but if you don't know, you don't know, and you can't participate. The real issue was the memoranda.
I think because at this point in time, they were going into deliberations, and it wasn't the part where you're taking testimony. Now, you can argue, though, that with all those, and that's what happened, actually, with all those memoranda, they should have taken additional testimony. But the continuation themselves of the deliberative process was not necessarily
that was
in violation.
Also problematic.
It wasn't a violation of the Sunshine Law.
Well, it's not that it wasn't problematic. The Justice Pollack's opinion, he says that the real problem with why they didn't find it was a violation was because of the way the legislature failed to clearly express whether or not more than one continuation of a meeting was allowed. And OIP has given guidance to the agencies over the years saying that, you know, if it's a reasonable continuation, it's okay. And so although the problem is the legislature didn't do a good job of allowing these continuances in the way it was written, the Supreme Court did say, but if you want to support the spirit and intent of the Sunshine Law, that means to hold the meeting as open as possible. And here's a couple of pages of ideas that we just thought of sitting around the table that you could have done differently to have done a better job. Mm-hmm. So
doesn't that also sort of beg the idea that maybe it needs to be cleaned up and more specific?
Well, what I think we can do just administratively, taking the hint from the court, is just saying if you're going to do continuances and it's feasible to do a written notice, do so. Because that was what the court wanted to see, more of a written notice going out that you're continuing this meeting.
Yeah, or don't bite off some. I mean, one thing they're saying, don't bite off more than you can chew. I mean, if you put the whole dictionary in your agenda, then, yeah, technically everybody has noticed that you're going to consider something in the English language. But,
By the time you get to M, yeah, it may be
right, exactly. And
5 months from now.
Yeah, so it's like, well, if you're going to consider the whole dictionary, maybe you might want to chop it up into, by letter or, by – that's essentially one of the suggestions that Justice Pollack made.
Well, the case itself is a roadmap to improving the law, I think. Whether it's done administratively or by statute, is not something I can say. But if you read it, you say, yeah, we should fix this, and yeah, we should fix this. There's several places. And there was one, I can't remember what page it was on, but there was one section where they where the Supreme Court declined to void the action that the legislature took. They said, we look around at other states and it's not too clear. Some states would void the action, some states would let it stand. And so the Supreme Court declined to void what the county council had done. But here's a case where the legislature could clarify that. And for example, I, as a member of the public, realize there's no consequences for the county council whatsoever to violate these laws, these and other transparency laws. So let's say if they do, then it's voided. Now, they can still come back and do it over, but maybe that'll be a lesson. Even having to lose a case and pay attorney's fees is nothing to them because they don't pay the attorney's fees. We do as taxpayers. So we see this over and over in government, not just in Hawaii, but all over the country and probably elsewhere, where government violates the law, and there's a settlement, and taxpayers pay the settlement. We need to do better with that. The first thing, I think, could be clarity in what they're supposed to do, and this case is a great roadmap. Starting from page 3, the opinion lays out what it was that the Land Use Committee did. They didn't write all that because it was trivial. They wrote all that because it was important. And we should take what the judge wrote and say, yeah, okay, this is an identified problem. And let's, as citizens, ask our legislators to fix it.
The question is it important enough for people to do that? I mean, how many people do you actually have? Well, maybe you guys more than most. But for those of you listening, how many conversations do you actually have where the words sunshine law come into it? Is it something that you even think about? We want to hear from you, 941-3689, if you're on Oahu, call that number. And if you're on the neighbor islands, 941-3689. Have you had reason to have the sunshine law in your life? Have you been thwarted by it in some way? Do you not understand it, even though there are websites, including the Office of Information Practices, that have information about the Sunshine Law? Is it something that even enters your consciousness? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. I mean, often it's a case that something doesn't begin to have any meaning for you at all until there comes a point in time where it has great meaning for you because suddenly you're in a situation where it could be helpful or it's something that is being used against you.
Until you ask for something and you don't get a response in the 10 days and you ask again and you get no response again, that's quite common.
Wait, that's the UIPA you're talking about. That's the open records law.
Yeah.
We're talking about Sunshine Law, which is the open meetings law.
We were, yeah.
I
think
the
average person
too.
Is concerned about transparency, and they want something. They want to ask for something. It's an open record, or they want to be at a meeting, or they want to see a financial report from a legislator. I hold that this is all, for the average person, this is a question of government transparency and public information. Yes, it's a different law, okay? But they're thwarted one way or another, whether it's to find out what a land use committee is doing or whether it's to get a public record. One way or another, the public has a hard time here.
I mean, that seems to be the overarching issue, and the fact that there's a great deal of confusion between what the open records law is and what the Sunshine Law is. Your point is just when you're thwarted and frustrated, at some point you don't care. You just want something to be able to help you out. But you have to know what you're doing under what law and how to be able to access that information if, in fact, you can. Meanwhile, Cheryl, you have the same staff ostensibly as you've had for quite a while, and your caseload is increasing with people who are coming to you saying, we want help and we don't understand why we're not getting the kind of assistance that we should be getting from government agencies who should be following the law.
Yeah, you know, at one time we had 15 staff people, and right after that they gave us the Sunshine Law to also administer, and then we got cut down in half.
Yeah, because
in staff people.
The Attorney General's office used to be the agency that would interpret the Sunshine Law. And then in the early 90s, it was moved by the legislature over to OIP. Mm-hmm. After they saw how successful OIP was with the open records law. So then they thought, perfect, that we can take that out of AG and park it in OIP. And
well, you can you can understand the thinking in that, but by the same token, you've got the same staff, or in many cases, less staff. If you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Jim calling us from Makiki. Aloha, Jim.
Aloha. I have an issue that relates to the willingness and sincerity of boards and commissions to actually accept testimony. You know, most of them have adopted rules that says 3 minutes and please leave, even if you're the only one testifying. And you often cannot comment on what has already been said during the meeting, as you can with legislative bills. Each bill comes up, you can testify, you can raise your hand, you can add comments. But for many boards and commissions, you cannot do this by their own rules. They really discourage an interactive environment, you often cannot even suggest what should come with a future agenda because it's not on the agenda. And I think that the spirit of the Sunshine Law is both not only to be able to observe, but to participate, and for the board and commission to welcome that participation. I'll take your comments off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim, very much for the call. Well, this kind of goes back to the idea, does a board really want to have participation? Is it trying to skirt the Sunshine Law? Does it just want to do what it wants to do, Larry?
Yeah, this is a problem that when a couple of us advocates get together, we talk about it, and I don't think we have any solution to it. The Board of Education, for example, limits testimony to 2 minutes. I think the City Council in Honolulu is down to one. I'm not sure if it's 2 minutes or 1 minute. But there comes a point when you allow somebody 16 seconds to talk. Is that really taking testimony? So it used to be 3 minutes. The Board of Education, the new board, actually cut off President Obama's sister at 2 minutes. And, you know, it's a matter of courtesy. I think you don't do that. But they did. And yes, they're fair to everybody. They cut off everybody at 2 minutes. But I think that's kind of a separate issue, which is important. It's important to me, but maybe just a little different from what we've been talking about today.
Well, you can also provide written testimony, and that's unlimited, right?
And not necessarily. So you might want to testify on something that's just been discussed. So there's no opportunity to provide the testimony. And also the legislature, which is not bound by any of these rules anyway, not this past session, but last year, they managed to one committee selectively took testimony of those who were in favor of the governor's nominees and refused testimony from people who are opposed to the governor's nominees. And it's all legit. I don't think it should be.
Well, you know, I think one of the things, too, is to consider is that boards and commissions in state and local government were created to allow citizen participation in the process. But the problem is to sort of minimize or try to move away from Tammany Hall-style politics. But the problem is that, what has happened as all of these boards and commissions have come up is that the senior bureaucrats or staff sort of handle the boards and most of the boards and commissions. And there's a few like the Board of Education or the City Council, which is elected, who don't really have that issue. Then they, do other ways to limit participation. But there's all these other boards and commissions where there are volunteers and they just listen to whatever staff has to say. And they don't really understand, well, why do I need to – I thought I'm on this board because I'm supposed to be the public that's overseeing this. Why do I have to listen to anybody else? And they're influenced by corporate culture where it's like, well, the board is the one that makes the decision and nobody testifies at, you know, board of director meetings. And so there's sort of like people don't fully see the big picture when they're on a board or commission. And then because there's so much turnover and so forth, it ends up being the staff that really – or the attorney for the board that really ends up guiding everything. And it's in those ways where the public probably feels the most shut out. Because they're like, well, how come nobody's listening to me? I get 2 minutes and they're like rolling their eyes or, you know, flossing their teeth and nobody's listening to me. And then after 2 minutes,
many boards, by the way, are quite good. I think there's an improvement these days, at least in my experience. But there's still the occasional.
Well, there's been more emphasis on training and hopefully getting people to understand some of their responsibilities and how they can be affected by things like the Sunshine Law. But that's been very recent. And you have a lot of people who have been on many, many boards and sort of carry that consciousness from one board to another board and now are being challenged to do things in a little bit different way. So we don't have those situations that we've very recently seen with the Sunshine Law. Tonight, that's what we're talking about, the decision from the Hawaii Supreme Court about the Maui County Council and what that means for future neighborhood boards, county councils, perhaps you. 941-3689 is our number, or 877-941-3689. Going now to Jacques calling us from Kaka'ako. Aloha. Thanks for your patience.
Can you hear me?
We can.
Since the inception of the Sunshine Law, I've noticed it's been consistently relegated to the dustbin of obscurity to the point where no one knows what it is. And few people have any understanding of it. So, consequently, the bureaucrats deem it superfluous.
Well, I think probably Cheryl Park will not agree with you on that one since it's been out there and available to people. But that presumes that someone is connected and can get onto your website and have a look at it. But the point that Jacques is making is sort of like, you know, if you don't really have reason to know, you probably don't. And there may be a situation that causes you to be compromised by not knowing it.
Hear, hear.
Well, we have a very robust website, which is just the most effective way that we can get the message out without having to mail stuff and mail things. We don't do that anymore. And since I've been on, we've increased all the training material on there considerably. Because our emphasis has been on trying to prevent these violations and trying to educate not just the board members, but members of the public. Because you can go online and do our hour and a half long video training that we used to do in person. Now, any member of the public can go online and do that same training and take that Sunshine Law quiz that you took, Bethann. If they don't have that much time, then we have these little quick reviews that talk about specific aspects of the Sunshine Law, what is required for notice purposes, what is required in minutes of the meeting. And we do the same thing on the open records side for the Uniform Information Practices Act, or UIPA, which allows people to get access to government records. We have the same type of training online for that as well.
Jacques, have you ever been on to the OIP website?
It's oip.hawaii.gov.
I think we lost Jacques, but you might want to take a look at that and see. Now, it hasn't, you know, in fairness, it's not been up there for ever and a day. It's only been fairly recently that it's been as robust as it is now. But the point being that if you want to know and you have access to the Internet, well, you can find some of that information. That seems to be a little bit of a sticky point, though, when we go back to the case that we were talking about earlier. That if you don't have access to it and you have no way of knowing, and if you're not perhaps, you know, watching television and watching the continuance as it's happening and when dates and times are announced and you know what they're going to be talking about, that you are very much shut out. What's that bridge in between, Lance? Is there some place? Because there are some people who clearly are not going to be on. I still have people today saying to me, well, yeah, I just don't like to do that.
Right. Well, that's, you know, that some of the excuses about these continuances were, well, you know, if people were watching Akaku, which is the public access station on Maui, you know, if they were watching the meeting at the end, you know, they didn't have to go to the county council's chambers to hear when the next continuance was going to be. But, you know, that presupposes that you have a television and you have cable.
And you're watching.
And you're watching and you're available to watch at that time. I mean, that's one thing. And then the other thing was, well, people could have gone, you know, to the website of the council to find out, you know, when the next meeting was, because a few days before the next meeting, they would note it on the previous agenda. And so, I mean, in addition to the skills of knowing, you had to look at the October 18th agenda for something occurring in mid-November. If you even knew how to do that, it again presupposes that you have access to a computer.
Well, couldn't they call the county clerk?
They could call the county clerk.
But it would have to be council services. You'd have to know to do that.
Well, you'd have to call council services. It's not the county clerk. It's actually council services. Yeah, you'd have to know to call council services. And I think the real thing is that the Sunshine Law is really supposed to the people who are supposed to really abide by its spirit and intent are all of the experts, are the people who are on these unelected boards and commissions or appointed board and commissions, and the people who go to all the meetings and are, those are the people that really we have to push and make sure that people are following the spirit and intent of the law, because for ordinary folks, all of this sort of esoteric, mystical legalese about what's the spirit and intent, they show up at a meeting and they either get to talk and someone's listening to them, or they don't get to talk and no one's listening to them, or they're completely shut out of the process, and all sort of the fine tuning of it is beyond most people's interest, comprehension, and the like.
That's the irony of it, though, because you're still saying that those people who feel disenfranchised, who don't know, who would likely want to know or be involved, are going to have to be the ones to push those who know in some way, shape, or form that they're supposed to be compliant in this way.
Right. Well,
let's think out of the box for a moment. Suppose councils and boards and commissions were required to take the educational class, whether they pass it or not, I don't know, but at least they required to take this video course and sign off that they did so, and that every county council, city, whatever it is, whatever board or commission it is required to have just a couple of papers around at their meetings for public information, or to make this available, or be able to tell a member of the public that you can find out more about this law, that law, the Sunshine Law, and you know, here's some information, or you go to the OIP website to get the information. When I was on a council for 3 years, we set ourselves the rule, every new member, you know, when they're appointed, every new member is going to take the OIP class and take an ethics class. And we did so for every member. Why can't other boards do that? And if they won't, then why can't we, you know, maybe in statute, maybe we need to make this a requirement in order to improve what's going on.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the Hawaii State Supreme Court decision about Maui County Council's inappropriate use of memoranda as it was deliberating a different a case, Kanahele versus Maui County Council. Hang on a second.
Sure.
And looking at this, not so much about this case in particular, but what it means as we go forward. Now, if you're on a board or thinking about being on a board, have been on a board, possibly on a county council seat, is it too much to ask that this be done? Would you do it? Would you voluntarily say, yep, we're going to sit down and we're going to go through all of the OIP information, take the course, watch the video, and sign off on it? Now, you are dying to say something.
Yes, because I want to speak up for the variety and diversity of people who serve on boards and commissions that are and councils that are subject to the Sunshine Law. There is one council member on Maui who I won't name, but I'm sure anybody who watches Akaku or reads the Maui News will know who I'm talking about, constantly complains that the Sunshine Law interferes with his right to freely speak and hang out with as many other council members as he wants to and whatever. And I consider his attitude to be, when I think of council members and politicians, people in politics when I was growing up on Maui, he's like the quintessential. That's what their attitude was about the Sunshine Law when I was growing up, was like,
do what you can to skirt it.
It's this thing like I'm entitled to speak to whoever I want. And, you know, I've told him previously, although I haven't talked to him recently about it, although he keeps talking about this, is, you know, look, no one's preventing you from speaking to these other council members. Resign your seat and you're free to do whatever you want. But as a council member, you're under an obligation of law to participate in transparency and to you know, support openness in government. So if you can't do that, you're free to resign at any moment. No one is forcing you to hold office. And he doesn't quite grasp that.
Let's see if those of you listening do. If you're on Maui, we want to hear from you too, because we're talking about you. But we want to hear what you have to say about all of this. What really is the obligation of someone who is in a council seat or who sits on a neighborhood board to really understand the Sunshine Law? The information is out there. Cheryl Park will tell you. It's a rich and robust site that you can go to. Take a video quiz. Know what you know and know what you don't know by the end of it. It doesn't take a long time. Should that be something that you are obligated to do if you sit on a board or if you're going to sit on the council? And certainly to understand that you are obligated to abide by the Sunshine Law. How do you feel about that? Especially Maui, we want to hear from you. That would be 877-941-3689 to get to us. 877-941-3689. And if you are on Oahu, that number is 941-3689 too. You know, you guys are awfully quiet tonight. I mean, maybe this is just a little bit too much to deal with at the moment. But then again, can we afford to have an attitude like that? We have a Sunshine Law for a reason, and looking at the spirit and intent of it is clearly what came through this decision from the Hawaii Supreme Court, which means that it's probably pretty important, and there are a lot of people who sit on boards. Why is it that we seem to feel sort of this reticence from people, like as if someone could be looking over their shoulder, and that would be inappropriate if you are in a very clear public seat?
Well, I think, you know, the issues of what's public and what's private, you know, what people consider to be, I think one of the issues that this council member that I just mentioned has is this notion that, you know, people are autonomous individuals and have a right to privacy and sort of intimate relationships that shouldn't necessarily be public. And, you know, I generally agree with that sort of philosophy that everybody has a strong right to privacy. And you give that up to some extent when you are a public figure, and you give up most of it when you hold a public office. We get to know all about your finances. You have to file ethics disclosure statements. We get to know who's giving you money to your campaign. You know, you can't.
Well, you're supposed to be doing all that, but it doesn't always happen,
right,
as we know, and that's
right.
Part of the problem.
It could be. I think it's a cultural thing. I mean, just look at what's going on nationally right now with the U.S. government violating the law right and left. With this whole NSA thing, every day there's new revelation. Somebody violated a law. They lie about it, and they're caught over and over again. I don't know how to explain it, but we have that here too in Hawaii and other states too, where people feel perhaps that the law doesn't. I don't know how to verbalize it properly. Maybe the law doesn't apply to me, or I'm above the law, or I don't know about that law and I don't care about that law. They got a job to do. I don't know what it is, but. Having a law is good, but it's only a first step. We do have a problem of compliance and enforcement.
Cheryl, weigh in.
Let's tell the people what the law is. Maybe they don't understand that. For one thing, the Sunshine Law doesn't prevent you from having conversations with other people or even with council members. It's just that if you're going to talk about anything that's board business, that's reasonably anticipated to come up before the board or is pending before the board at that time, you can't talk about it in private with board members. Mm-hmm. You have to have that in an open meeting. You can still talk to your friends, your constituents, you know, other people about it. It's just that.
But you've got to know some lines to draw with your mm-hmm. conversation. And if you're trying to exert undue influence in a very, sort of familial setting.
And we've long
it's different
said
than being in a meeting.
That what you can't do by talking, you can't do through emails or tweets or, you know, whatever else.
Any other form of
sign language.
Yeah, I should correct my example for the Maui council member. He wants to talk about board business and he doesn't understand why.
He shouldn't be allowed to do that
with the whole.
So what you're saying is he doesn't get that line. Speaking of lines, though, we've got folks on ours. And if you'd like to join us, our number is 941-3689 and 877-941-3689. 3689 if you're calling us from Maui, as is Constance. Aloha. Thank you for your patience.
Aloha. I have been appointed, thank goodness, to the SHPDA, the State Health Planning and Development Agency, and I am just starting to learn about what my part, my role is for Maui County. And I just wanted to let you know that I welcome the education videos and the OIP and the website, because I feel like I can serve Maui County so much better if I have some of the know-how and the do's and the don'ts. I am not offended at all by being told, you know, you can't meet with X number of committee members, you know, too often, or, you know, you have to regulate that. I welcome, as a new member, I welcome some of that information.
Constance, how many other people that you talk to actually feel the same way you do? Or do they look at you and think, oh boy, she's got the newbies?
Well, on the Tri-Island meetings that we have, I believe, are going to be once a month now, and there's three new people. And I'm guessing that some of the people that have been on the committee actually welcome, because then we will have more know-how. I did not get a feeling like, oh, God, here she's overexcited over, you know, the newbie thing. I got that they were going to be happy that we were going to be in the know a bit.
Well, I mean, it does clearly make it easier when you know what you can and what you can't do. It's not as if it's trying to make it more difficult. It's quite the opposite.
And speaking of that, we just recently came out with a series of three quick reviews that say exactly what board members can talk about outside of a meeting. So if you go to our website, oip.hawaii.gov, and you look under the What's New page, you'll see the latest information that we put out there, as well as our training page. You'll see all of our training material. It's all there.
It's not tough to get. That's the whole point. It's not tough to get. Constance, thanks so much, and good on you. If you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open, 941-3689, 877-941-3689. Tonight we're talking the Sunshine Law and the fact that after 20 years, we've got a lot more attention being paid to it, courtesy of a case that whose decision we just got from the Hawaii Supreme Court earlier this month. 941-3689 is our number, 877-941-3689. We want to hear from you. What do you really know about the Sunshine Law? Does it impact your life? And if you're on a board or thinking about being on a board, if you're thinking about being on a county council, is this something that you've actually stopped to consider? What are your obligations and responsibilities to be able to follow the Sunshine Law? Going now to Alexis, calling us from Kaneohe. Aloha, Alexis.
Hi, I had a question for Cheryl Park.
Sure.
I was just wondering if her office is planning to issue a summary on the Supreme Court case that lay people can understand.
You did.
Well, we did. We did a 3-page summary of the 80-page decision, and you can find that on our What's New site. And I tried to make it as simple as possible, but, you know, it does deal with a bit of legal concepts.
Did you have a chance to read through that, Alexis?
No, I haven't seen it yet, but thank you for answering that question.
Really, truly, it's we've read through it, and yes, there are some legal things that have to be legal, but just because they are. But to reduce 80-some-odd pages to 3, at least you'll walk away knowing a whole lot, perhaps, than you knew going in.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks very much for the call.
Ian Lind also, he did, I thought, and it was sort of based off of OIP's thing, he sort of went through and then interviewed a couple of people and did something. And I don't know if that was on his blog or he did that one for...
I think he did on the Civil Beat.
Oh, on for Civil Beat. Yeah, yeah. But I think...
It was quite good.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that was in the... He with the additional interviews, that helped make the lay explanation on OIP's site more...
More meaningful.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we did it in one day, so
yeah.
We didn't have
time. He had a week.
Interview.
He had a week and a half,
but
and
the
he
point
interviewed
is,
people.
The point is, and we keep saying this, and we can't dance around it, you've got to go out there and be willing to find the information one way or the other, which goes to a larger issue of being civically engaged. If you're going to be on a board, that's part of civic engagement, too. There are rights, responsibilities that come along with that. This is part of it.
And, you know, a board can ask OIP for information as well.
They do.
And, yeah, they do.
And we help them out all the time. We answer their questions because we don't want to see problems after the fact. We want to try to avoid them before they even come up.
It's a lot easier that way.
The public can call you up if they're uncertain, and they'll get, you know, usually get an answer. Short, if it's simple enough, you get an answer right there on the phone.
Yes, we call it our attorney of the day service, mm-hmm. so you can call or email. And, in fact, in the last 2 years, we've seen a 55% increase in AOD calls. And a 40% increase in just inquiries, all types of inquiries to OIP.
Do you feel a pressure with this case and others in the fact that for a lot of very good reasons, people are coming to you and saying, I need help, and you're still the same, you know, the same ostensible staff? You'll get one more person soon, but...
Well, we're really grateful for that additional position that we're going to get. But... you know, we just have to do what we can do, which is why we focused on education and training, because we think that we can, with our limited resources, reach the most people and do the most good that way, rather than taking on an individual case, you know.
Well, you could,
rather than waiting for all the individual cases to come in and litigating. We don't have that kind of resources. Plus, that's not our role. You know, we're not the enforcer of this. We're there to provide a free, readily accessible service for everybody. So we're a neutral party.
Yeah, OIP doesn't have enforcement. They can't. If a board is breaking it, their only enforcement mechanism is to write an opinion saying
that.
As
I said, they just can't do
that. So that is left to the Attorney General, who I can tell you the Attorney General has not prosecuted any Sunshine Law cases. It's left to private citizens.
The Attorney General doesn't represent the citizens. He represents the state agency. He's going to defend the state agency against any action.
Well, can I say something kind of different, off track? But what I like about this Supreme Court case is that they really recognized OIP's role in all of this as being the agency that administers the Sunshine Law as well as the UIPA, and gave great deference, I think, to our opinions.
Didn't they cite you seven or eight times?
Well, actually, it turned out to be 8 times, and 5 of them were very substantive discussions. And they applied the palpably erroneous standard, which is a very tough standard of review. And that's the same standard that we got in our appeals law that we passed in 2012. So it's really... a validation for us to know that the Supreme Court is actually going to be applying the standard, which means the rest of the courts have to, too, and they're going to have to give OIP's decisions great deference. So mm-hmm. now if the agencies refuse to follow our advice, they know that they're going to be up against a pretty high wall if the case is then taken to the courts.
Well, the greatest value of this case may be if it keeps other cases from happening. Because the only enforcement is to go to court. And I think that's something that was criticized by John Temple's article a couple years ago in Civil Beat. There was a survey of states and their – well, a survey of various things. But in terms of enforcement, Hawaii got a 0 out of 100 because the only way you can enforce it is to go to court. And, you know, what Lance did was very unusual in fighting this case through. It very, very seldom happens. It shouldn't have to happen, in my view. You should not have to go to court to get an agency that is not obeying the law.
I think that sometimes you just have to go to court and have the court set the ground rules, and they did. And so now people are going to be paying, I think, a lot closer attention to our decisions. You know, they're going to have to come in with the right facts. I mean, the full facts, not just fluff us off, and give us, good arguments. And if we tell them that they're supposed to disclose or that they were in violation, they better take it pretty seriously because it's going to be hard to overturn in the courts. And if you go up to the courts and you lose as an agency, you're going to be liable for attorney fees.
Well, let's see how that works out because I don't think they know what this
case
means.
I think they do.
Well, yeah, I think one of the – see, this is maybe a finer legal point that maybe people aren't interested listening to, but what was one of the main disputes from the very beginning was that we argued that you if there's an ambiguity in the statute with the continuances, for example, you have to look at OIP opinions and you have to look at the legislative history. You can, and you have to take all of that and interpret the law in the spirit of openness and transparency.
And that's what the court did?
Well, that's what the Supreme Court did, but that's not what the that's not what the trial court or the Intermediate Court of Appeals did. And that was one of the things I think I personally was very delighted with was that the court adopted that approach because otherwise the alternative was like as though you were just dealing with a board of directors of a corporation. It's like, well, they substantially complied and no harm, no foul, nobody's arms fell off, so just keep moving forward. And that's sort of what the approach had been. And with the trial courts, I can understand, you know, they're not elected. They're very sensitive to telling an elected legislative body, you know, that they've done something wrong on a procedural level. Judges are very sensitive to that. And so I think that this case is, in that respect, is very helpful because it essentially tells the trial court judges, look, this is not a deference to anybody. You guys need to make sure that the spirit and intent of openness and transparency are happening, and you need to do it by listening to OIP, who's the expert in the field and has to deal with all these people all the time. So if they're doing a violation and OIP says it's a violation, it's a violation.
Which seems to, you know, up the cachet with OIP a whole lot. And not that there wasn't the same spirit before with OIP, but now there just seems to be a real sea change in the way it's being perceived and the consequences for not listening to OIP opinions. Do you feel somewhat validated by all this?
Very much so. I think this
after all this time of having to fight?
They have been validated. It's wonderful. But I think you need to be an attorney to understand it. And this guy in Maui who thinks he should be able to speak to everybody, this doesn't matter to him. And it won't matter to somebody else who decides they don't want to give a record or they don't want to fix their what they're doing at meetings.
Yeah, the question is, does it matter?
They're not attorneys.
To people, though? I mean, if it really matters to people that there be a sense of openness and that the Sunshine Law be complied with, then there's going to have to be some pressure. Again, so it's coming back down to almost, you know, the person who has perhaps the least amount of time to take care of any of this, who might have, in some cases, the least interest until something suddenly makes it very interesting to him or her, but really pushing it down toward the bottom as, you know, people have to deal with the Sunshine Law and make it incumbent upon them to push upward to make those who should be compliant anyway understand that.
See, there's some situations where this case may not even have to do with what's going on. Let's say a commission, a board, or county council goes into executive session and somebody there says, oh, this is off the record. They don't even take minutes. And they talk about something that they're not allowed to talk about that should be discussed in public. Then they come out of the meeting and vote immediately. This is not uncommon, you see. But there's no minutes and there's no way to catch them. And so without a culture of obeying the law, without a culture of internalizing that you need to do certain things in front of the public, I don't see any change. I think people will continue to try to find a way around the law if they think they can get away with it.
Let me give some balance to this. You know, because you can go into executive session for various reasons, specific reasons. For example, if you're talking about personnel, you know.
And very sensitive issues.
Yes. Yeah. People have their privacy rights. So that discussion can take place in executive session. You're not going to repeat that discussion when you come out. Because
why did you keep it in the first place?
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about things they're not supposed to talk about in executive session.
You're saying using it as an excuse to go into executive session to talk about all kinds of things and then come out and potentially vote on what they just talked about.
Yeah, and it's also, by the way, very frequently because in the agenda, if they do it right, they usually quote the law and they say, for discussing with our attorney personnel matters and this and that. And so you have a deputy AG in the meeting. And the deputy AG isn't telling them that what they're doing is wrong either.
All right. We've got a caller on the line. If you'd like to be next, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. a robust discussion around the table tonight on Town Square about the Sunshine Law. How much do you really know about the Sunshine Law, and has it had an impact in your life? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you call us from the neighbor islands, as did Nick calling us from Maui. Aloha.
Yeah, aloha. It's Nick Kielananda, actually. And hi, Beth Ann. And I want to first thank Lance for his efforts. This has been a really good discussion.
Thank you.
Now, I served on a Maui County board about 20 years ago. And even our daily paper reversed, in their headline, reversed the Supreme Court's decisions, the results.
They got it wrong.
Yeah, they got it backwards. And so anyway, I've got a couple of points on the discussion. I mean, you've hit on so many different topics. You could have a five-hour discussion. But as far as testimony, yeah, different boards have different amounts of time. Most of the Maui County boards and the council is at 3 minutes, which is woefully insufficient. And, for example, in this particular case, the development's representative was previously in the Maui County government, either public works head or whatever. So he's got already unfair connections, you know, inside. And a lot of people really feel that, you know, developers and quite a number of people come with disadvantage. They can have as much time as they want for presentations, and the public gets 3 minutes. And so I'm really appreciative that this was challenged, you know, in court. And not everyone has the time or the money or can find an attorney that's willing to challenge this, you know. And the appointments to boards and commissions, they're almost always stacked by the mayor and then the county council's approvals. And we have two great examples here. The Maui County Planning Commission always has a couple of people that are looking out for the community, but it's always stacked with people that are looking out for the developers. And our Charter Commission was just woefully terrible, the last Charter Commission. All these important items that came up were just not put out to the public.
Nick, Lance is nodding his head over some of this, but do you see that this is any sort of a glimmer of hope, or is this just one more blip and then it'll be back to normal?
Well, sadly, I always feel like I wouldn't be calling if I didn't have some kind of positive feeling for the future. But I've just watched after 25 years of involvement here in Maui County that, you know, they give, crumbs to people on whether it's a development or whether it's something, a charter change or something like that. So mostly I see that, you know, we get little incremental positive things that occur, but generally it's just going the same way. And, you know, something that was said earlier that really has to be underlined, it's true. You know, our county got sued something like $6 million on one issue. Well, the mayor isn't paying that money, and the commission and the people in the administration didn't pay that money. It's the citizens. So we pay, they get us either way.
So it really behooves.
So it doesn't make a difference whether they abide by Sunshine Law, they abide by following what the rules and your regulations
are. But the point that you're trying to make is that it's incumbent upon real people, citizens, to understand that this is coming out of our pockets. It's not
right.
coming
well,
out of some other
pool.
The same
way that everybody says, right. Oh, we can build this road because 90% is coming from the federal government.
Well, that's still coming from us, right? That's
exactly.
The point.
And so, you know, and I don't want to get into too much political when people say, shrink the government, but pave my road.
Right,
you know?
and that's
that
a whole other
mentality.
Discussion. Nick, thanks so much for calling in. We're going to take another call from Maui before we all have to say goodbye. Thanks for calling us tonight. Sylvia, also calling from Maui. Thanks for your patience. Sylvia, there?
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi there.
I have written the county council numerous times, the mayor's office, Calendar Maui, asking that the newspapers also, I wrote them, asking them to publish the dates of these hearings so that the people can show up. Like they have water hearings and then there's like one person shows up. It's we don't know and there's no place to find, well, you know, easily to find the dates of the hearings. And I'm sure that everybody is interested and wants to make the right changes and would if we knew when and where to go.
Sylvia, you bring up a good point. Thanks so much. There have been calls for city calendars or something where you can go to and find out where and when and be able to plan what things you want to participate in. And I don't mean, you know, fun stuff calendars, but calendars of meetings, board meetings and council meetings and committee meetings and hearings. And the response has very often been, well, we just don't have the space for that. We don't have someone who can husband all of that and shepherd it and make it all happen, which again puts a lot of the onus back on an individual who seems to be, you know,
well, I think one of
more
the,
put upon than most to have to find the information.
One of the benefits of this opinion where it, you know, how does it impact an individual? That, you know, there are some serious limitations. But, for example, the press has traditionally had that role of being the person that gets the – is able to sort that information out and then spit it out to the rest of us to figure out what's going on.
But not necessarily in a comprehensive way in the way that she's asking.
Right, and not in a comprehensive way. And so I think that this opinion has been useful because all of those sort of intermediaries between the power center and us, the rest of us, I think it's given them another tool in the mm-hmm. box to help facilitate the masses being able to be connected to what's going on in
it
power. But unfortunately, when it comes to comprehensiveness, that is a problem. Is that
see at the state level, you have the state calendar online, and by executive order, all state agencies have to post their meeting notices online. And it's in one place, and you can access that, again, through OIP's website at oip.hawaii.gov.
And we should say, too, that some of these will allow you to get yourself on a list to where it automatically feeds to your email.
I think what Sylvia is talking about, and I could be wrong, she can correct me if I'm wrong, is I think one of the problems is that, you know, well, everybody hears, oh, they're going to hike the water rate, and then you go and look for the agenda, and there's 12 months worth of agendas for the Board of Water Supply, and you have no idea that it's communication number 2103-something. And I mean, the agenda has to be truthful and say exactly what they're considering, but for most people, sifting through that is so confusing that by the time you get to actually what's happening, they have no idea what's going on.
And that's been the criticism of many websites that have to do with state,
too
city,
much information.
And federal
agencies. We could
do better. The information's there, but trying to navigate it is just a nightmare, and that's a whole other issue. We're coming down to the last couple of minutes of the show. Just to bring it back to this case and what this means going forward, I want to give you each about 30 seconds. And Larry, you go first.
I think this case is a roadmap to doing better. If we're interested in transparency, all the different laws, then you have to work at it. Transparency doesn't come automatically. People have to demand it. And government can find ways to get that information out to the public better than they're doing now.
Speaking of getting information out to the public, we'll go next to you, Cheryl Park.
Well, actually, what we're planning to do is put together maybe a CLE, a continuing legal education program, or at least an update, an OIP update. And we're going to talk about Kanahele and some of what we want to do in the future based on this decision.
So more to come from you. And Lance, we'll let you back clean up since it was your case in the first place.
Sure. I just want everybody to know who didn't know who were these people that sued. It was a gardener, a retired truck driver, a waitress, a diver, and a violinist.
So don't think that you can't do something just because
they didn't pay
you're
me
in
a penny.
Very, very powerful.
That's
positions.
Right. They didn't pay me a penny. They didn't have a penny to pay, and they felt so offended by what happened. And they asked me, and I said that I would be more than happy to fight for them.
And clearly happy now to have this decision handed down to you earlier this month.
Absolutely.
Lance Collins, Cheryl Park, Larry Geller, thank you so much for being here. And thank you for joining us tonight on Town Square. We'll be back next week on Thursday, and I'll see you tomorrow morning right here for The Conversation at 8 o'clock. I'm Beth Ann Koslovich. Aloha.